Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio. I am so delighted to be here with you on a wonderful Monday. I mean, you know, Mondays, they're great, right? Woohoo! We're going to make this one a great one. So we have a special edition of Goddess Alive Radio due to eclipse and retrograde energy and general chaos occurring in my life. We've had to shift some shows around, and tonight we are with Dem Poitras, who is the author of Parthenogenesis, and we are going to be talking about that topic. Now, if you don't know what that topic is, you really want to hang in there and tune in, because this harkens back to not only a superpower of the goddess, but ancient matriarchal traditions. And Den has a really unique, some unique stories and aspects, and of course, you know, him doing a book on this. We're going to get into that topic tonight. So here we are. A few days before the full moon, so I just want to remind everyone, goddessfullmoongroup.com, we are covering Green Tara this Thursday night on Mystery School of the Goddess. It is free to join. Brandi Offset and myself are leading it, and we will be talking about how we can open to receive the blessings of the universe, of goddess, of deity, because if you're an armadillo, nothing can get in, and Green Tara has a very, very special way of reaching through. So we're going to be doing some chanting, some Om Tari Tutari Tuti Swahas, and other gorgeous things. So please join us for our community this Thursday night. It's really wonderful, and there's an opportunity to share and discuss and ask questions, as well as go through the meditation and chants. So that is on for full moon. Anybody who is on the Mystery School of the Goddess list, you should have gotten a new update. Talk about retrograde. I'm telling you, I think Mercury has been sitting on my tech and my brain, you know, since pre-shadow time. Thanks so much. So Mercury is actually going retrograde towards the end of this month, along with Mars, Pluto, Venus, Saturn. You know, it's just one of those months, one of those seasons. So I got it out a little bit late today, but it has so many new offerings. I really encourage everyone to jump over to mysteryschoolthegoddess.net. Check out what our marvelous instructors have going on. We have the Blessings of Beltane with Dr. Susan Harper. You know, she does all of our Sabbats for us. It's so amazing, and she brings some really gorgeous information. Our big, big news for Mystery School of the Goddess is we have Seeking the Goddess as a free access course, and you are invited to sign up for free. You can even go seekingthegoddess.com direct. This is a collaboration. I took in contributions from many of our instructors, our contributors on Mother House, and many prominent goddess women, four mothers of the goddess spirituality community contributed, and it is a gorgeous, gorgeous collection of divine feminine wisdom. So it's for those who really are kind of going, what is the whole goddess thing about? What is goddess spirituality about? But it also is some really in-depth foundational writings that will certainly boost anyone, whether you have been connected to goddess for years and years and years and lifetimes, or just a couple of months. So I encourage you to check that out. Brandi Offset has chakra meditations out. Renee Starr has Calling Down the Stars, Celestial Magic, Earth Prayer with Molly Reamer. And I am doing a Shakti Inner Circle that just started this month, and you are more than welcome to sign up. So anything, anyway, all that gorgeousness, all that goodness is over at mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net. Our Mother Root came out from Mother House of the Goddess. So it's been a busy, busy couple of days. So you can also sign up on motherhouseofthegoddess.com for Mother Root. And our free gift this month was offered by Renee Starr. And she did a gorgeous PDF of The Magic of Newt, the goddess Newt. So since we were in that celestial, cosmic kind of frame of mind with Mother Root, and of course, in honor of her, you are woman, you are divine, and calling down the stars.
Whoosh! It's a lot. It's a lot going on.
I remind you to look back at your intention, to look back at your new moon intention. What were you seeding? How are you succeeding? How are they progressing? How does your garden grow, kind of a thing? Are you taking care of your intentions? Are you struggling? Are you meeting challenges? Don't be concerned if you are. I'm here to tell you that whenever planets are in retrograde, and we've got a lot of them in retrograde right now, it is an opportunity for us to step back, take a deep, deep breath, and review. Allow ourselves to proact, not react. Don't freak out. You know, we all joke around about Mercury retrograde, but you know, Mercury retrograde also brings a lot of an amazingly wonderful blessing. This is downtime for our soul, downtime for our minds. Especially with Saturn in retrograde, we have opportunities to review life lessons, karmic patterns. You know, Mars in retrograde is really hitting on our heart's desire. Are we in the career, vocation, life path that we want to be in? And Mars in retrograde is really calling all of that into question in some really incredibly foundational ways. So I've been seeing some amazing shifts in the communities. I talk to women, you know, throughout my day and evenings. You know, everyone is asking the same questions. It's kind of funny. So this is how it is affecting us. We will have Mary Lamondo's full moon up this week. And for those of you who would like to check in on your horoscopes, of course, Audrey Allison has the wonderful videos, and Chani Nicholas put out her horoscopes for the week this morning. So, covered. Yay! Okay. I think that is probably all of our housekeeping. Again, just pop over motherhouseofthegoddess.com. We've got some really great articles that are up. Kim Hageman, I just want to give a big shout out to Kim Hageman. She is a contributor and the assistant creative editor for Mother House of the Goddess. You all don't see the amazing work that she does helping me rein in my Shakti powers. So Kim, for all of her allowance of me bouncing off ideas, and to Brandy Offset for the same, for Mystery School and Mother House. So we have a lot of really tremendous women that are working behind the scenes to bring all of this gorgeousness to you. So pop over to the blog. Check out, we've got some new contributors that are really starting to hit their rhythm. Mary Pettiot, Susan Morgane. Kim has a book review up on the Book of She. So, you know, lots of really, really good stuff. Also, don't miss Kim's herbal tonics. So, you know, we're doing some recipes. I get my hungry goddess on, and so does Kim Hageman. So, and you know, it's a Kim. It's got to be awesome. So, check out all the beautiful offerings. And these are the things that are given over to the community in love all the time. So, there you go. All right. Parthenogenesis. What a huge topic. This is the ability of woman to create life without a man or a male influence. This is the ability of woman to procreate herself within herself. When we talk about parthenogenesis, I think of the Gnostic goddess Sophia, who created the universe through a self-induced orgasm and birthed her daughter the same way. So throughout history, there are many goddess myths about parthenogenesis. There are goddesses that we consider to be parthenogenetic. There is stories and myths that are woven through many of our ancient matriarchal cultures. So this is a really, really, it's a heavy topic. It's an interesting topic. It is definitely something that we should all consider. Because when we think about our generative powers as men and women, when we think about our ability to create, to manifest, this is a really important topic to kind of weave in to your awareness. And Dem Poitras has been like one of the few people that really talks about this. Marguerite Rigoglioso does as well in some of her books. So Den is, and he's got a lot of really interesting things going on here. He was, you know, a completely raw diet person. We're going to talk about vegetarianism and things like that too, because so good. We're going to talk about a 6'2" breatharian woman named Laurie who self-conceived a child in a state of indescribable meditative bliss. We want to know more about that. That's Shakti, ladies and gentlemen that are listening. That is Shakti all the way. So let's get Den on and get this conversation going. Hi, Den. How are you?
Hi, Kim. Good. Yeah, you should change the spelling of Shakti to Shakti, S-H-O-C-K, because it's quite a jolt of information. It's very ancient. And it's being put in a modern light, and it's definitely part of the great unveiling of the Divine Mother and the missing puzzle piece that has kept humanity in the dark for so long. But she is willingly unveiling this information, obviously, and the irony of it all is that... somehow I feel that, well, it chose me as much as I chose it. once I opened Pandora's box when I was 18, back in 1969, in the spring of 1969, I began finding information about parthenogenesis, women's long-lost ability to self-conceive, and having been raised Roman Catholic, you know, I certainly got my brain indoctrinated with all of it, but there was a genuine spirit of spirituality that my parents had. They never were heavy about religion, but they always went to church, and they never, you know, demanded that we... You know, except when we were very young, we just, you know, it was obligatory to go to church. But despite the dogma, there was something oozing through Catholicism, you know, the mystery and the magic and the incense and the Gregorian chants that they used to have. And so I was pretty much endowed and blessed with a beautiful spirit of that self just kind of came through to me personally. Even though I completely had rejected it by the time I was 18. And my parents said, you know, when we reached, along with my siblings, the age of 16, we were free to go to church or not. And I remember the first time I didn't go, I was wondering if I was going to get struck by lightning. But I never did. So here I am after several years of rejecting it, seeing it once again, but seeing it in the light of archaeology, mythology, and biology, which really got me. And, I mean, there are so many virgin births. You could Google virgin births, and you'll see lists and lists of very famous mythological people that were born that way, conceived that way. In India, they accept parthenogenesis, or the virgin birth, as part of their culture, and it's like, oh, yeah, we know about that. Krishna and, you know, various masters were conceived and born that way. Buddha in particular, Buddha's mother was meditating under a banyan tree in the forests when she was told in this beautiful light that she had conceived the Buddha. And, you know, that's completely independent of Christianity, and there are so many instances of that And so anyway, that's what started me off, and I was at the Hippocrates Health Institute in Boston, the discoverers and founders of alfalfa sprouts, mung bean sprouts, and wheatgrass. They developed wheatgrass, which has 80% chlorophyll in it. And I got my bloodstream completely regenerated and cleansed and repaired, and my consciousness went up, 100%. I became aware of my awareness. And I'm going to get to the point of analyzing what the word virgin means. So a woman, we'll talk about a woman, even if she's had a child, she can restore her virginity by perhaps the husband has gone or has even died, and she might be middle-aged, and she might have the opportunity to become a vegetarian, a fruitarian, and somebody to practice yoga. And so the reward from that is that when the blood becomes very alkaline and gets rebuilt and regenerated through chlorophyll and raw food, greens, lots of greens, nothing cooked, mm-hmm. no more grains, no more meat, no more dairy, to really get cleansed and go on a super cleansing diet and then a rebuilding diet, again with more chlorophyll, then her blood becomes more alkaline. And the reward for that is virginity or celibacy. Is actually, it's a reward. It's not a punishment. It's not, you're not repressing your sexuality. It's like sexual energy, when the body is completely cleaned out and rebuilt, sexual energy becomes, what's the word, sublimated. It doesn't mm-hmm. become repressed. So you start, and it's like, when I was living in Hippocrates, there was a lot of people coming there from different parts of the world, different ages, most of them elderly, but there were some young women coming there, and they were cleaning themselves out, and they noticed that their periods were diminishing. And when I met them, they felt like my sisters. I didn't have this drive toward them in a sexual way. It was like instant soul connection with everybody, and it was a genuine, sincere feeling. And so we could get into these great conversations, and they would tell me about their periods and how after a couple of months, because there were some women there that had been there for 6 months or longer, and she said, when I first came here, she had PMS. She bled a lot, she had cramps, she was crabby, and it was painful. It was, typical periods, but they began to diminish. And one of the women said, and I'll never forget it, she said, now when I have my period, there's just a little pinkish color in her urine on her period day, and there was no cramps, and that was it. And she had tremendous energy, and she was completely healthy on every level imaginable, and she had no need to like go find a guy or have sex or anything, because that energy gets sublimated. So she has become a virgin again. So that okay. it's a.
Yeah. Okay. I want to stop you there, Jen.
That's the background. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So let's explore this.
I know.
because it's very, very interesting. And so let's begin with the raw food diet. So is that really, and so this is an interesting thing too, and you're saying like a woman restores her virginity. So does a man as well on a raw food diet?
Yes.
Is that okay.
Exactly.
Right.
I was still quote unquote a virgin. When I was 18, I didn't really have my full blown relationship until I was 20. Mm-hmm. So, but it, I had lost my seed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't like Samson in the Bible where he never lost his seed until he met Delilah. So that
yeah.
mythology is there. But it's part of yoga. Yeah, it's part of yoga. The yogis, when they start off early, 7, 8, 9 years old, they start meditating and again the raw food, fruit and nuts and vegetables mm-hmm. and every, you know, small amounts. And they meditate and they do all the asanas and, you know, they do training and all various things in public service and, you know, sweep the temple and keep
yeah.
things clean, laundry. Yeah, you know.
This is a rigorous
same
lifestyle.
Thing.
Yeah, it's a rigorous lifestyle.
So it's the word discipline, it's discipleship, and it's the motivating factor is joy. It's like, so eating that diet, it wasn't like a discipline, you know. It was this joyous discipleship, this like, mm-hmm. oh, this is so much fun. I get so much energy out of this. And my sexual energy, I became naturally celibate. You know, I didn't repress my energy. You know, it just,
mm-hmm.
it's like my body was relieved of all the toxins. So the toxins weren't seeking all these different channels for elimination. So that's why celibacy fails. You know, like you see that in the Catholic Church. You see it in any religion mm-hmm. where the men, for moral reasons, are not supposed to indulge in sex. And that's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the serpent is not going to be repressed. The serpent's going to pop up in the form of, you know, abuse and masturbation and all kinds of, you know, nocturnal emissions. And but
mm-hmm.
all that's eliminated. That pressure is gone when the body is eliminating fresh food very easily. And there's no pressure on the reproductive organs, you know, to have sex, you know. You know,
yeah.
all that is, so it's this gentle sublimation that occurs, and one is filled with energy day and night. The people, they were doing like 4 to 6 hour sleeping patterns, and we'd wake up at mm-hmm. dawn and we'd start planting everything. I mean, this was in Boston, the Hippocrates Health Institute. 6-story brownstone building was donated to Dr. Ann Wigmore and Viktoras Kalvinskas. They were both Lithuanian in their heritage, along with Maria Gimbutas, although she wasn't there, but all Lithuanian influence. But everyone had this tremendous workhorse energy and this just fun joy. And I was the youngest one there, and Dr. Rand was like in her 60s and running up and down the stairs like a 20-year-old. Endless energy, you know. She'd be up 18 to 20 hours a day, and there was lots of people from all over the world overcoming cancers and diabetes and all kinds of illnesses, and they were there, and they were on that diet, and they were growing their hair back, and I mean, it was just miraculous to be there for like a year working, you know, and growing all their food in trays that were put in the window. And so the whole place, you step into the building, into the Hippocrates Health Institute, and it was like all this beautiful, fresh air. You know, it's like you were in the forest. It was all sweet, full of oxygen, because plants were growing everywhere. And they would harvest, we would harvest all these different kinds of greens and sprouts every day and keep planting. And so they were pretty much growing all the food that people were eating, and it was very delicious and easy to eat and digest and very delicious. And so it all became, that was my foundation for the knowledge of, I began to tap into their libraries. Viktor Kalvinskas and Ann Wigmore had these huge libraries filled with books that you would not find anywhere. The Mysteries of Human Reproduction, The Secrets of Regeneration, books full of ancient occult knowledge and biological mysteries of women, ancient matriarchal societies, and it just went on and on. And once I opened the door on that, it wouldn't go away. I mean, I had to leave the place, which was like major tragedy. It was like I was thrown out of the garden. You know, I was in paradise for about a year, and then I had to go back to normal life and look for work. And you really need a community to sustain that type of lifestyle, and I have not found one since. I tried reproducing on my own a number of times, but I would always fall short. It really takes a village to live that way. It's a very joyous, simple, wonderful way to live, and your body tells you it's the right thing, but it's just not for this time for many of us. One has to be, I think, independently wealthy or in some kind of cooperative situation with a land base, hopefully in the subtropics or at least Florida where you are.
Right. But, well, you know, Den, we have Hippocrates down here in West Palm.
I know, right.
Yeah. And they offer wonderful classes and retreats. But, you know, I mean, what you're describing as well certainly brings to mind for me ashram living. You know, I visited Kasi Ashram down here, and while they're not on a raw food, but they are on a completely vegetarian diet, and it's absolutely it's amazing to be in that space where everyone works together very cooperatively.
Yes.
You know,
it is, right. Mm-hmm. It's reminiscent of matriarchy, you know, egalitarianism. It's reminiscent of that. Mm-hmm. It's a step in the right direction. But, you know, when if that should ever get here, then we may, which is what my book is pointing to, women may be in a state where they might just conceive like that with effort. It takes effort, and it takes knowledge, and it takes women's wisdom, and wisdom of nature, and observing your body, and knowing when, a woman, knowing when you might be ovulating, and it's tantra. I got some man read my article before it was a book, and he's part of an ashram in India. I don't remember his name. I had it written down somewhere, but, you know, it's an Indian name, and he talked about, you know, how, oh, yes, this is part of our teachings here at the ashram, and he's talking about the new age that we are on the brink of, and he said in this new age, women will be conceiving like this again, and, like mysteries of tantric sex or just tantra will, you know, it's available. It's still there. It's hidden, but it's there. And what Margaret Rigolosio, what she uncovered by studying mythology, Greek mythology, and especially the priestesses, you know, she kept seeing over and over again, Partheno, Parthenon, Parthenos, Parthenogenesis. And she kept seeing it, you know, while she was doing this, I don't know if it was her thesis that she was working on in the university, but it became her probably obsession, you know, at a certain point. You really got to sweat to concentrate in a scholarly manner, which is what she did. She's a meticulous scholar. So what occurred to her, she said, what if they are really, literally talking about a woman's ability to conceive on her own? And so that's what really generated her book. So nobody can stand against what she has uncovered. And that's the way I feel about this subject too. Once I, like I said, opened the door of Pandora's box, I couldn't shake it. You know, it would come up in conversation uncannily amongst my friends and peers, you know. And I had a lot to say about it, you know, that I could share, which I felt very fortunate to whenever, you know, it's not like I go around talking about this, you know. I'm a man, you know. That's the irony of it, the beauty of nature, you know. It's like if I was a woman and I've done the research and I wrote this book, you know, I'd probably get a lot more flack. You know, but I'm a man, and I'm writing about this book with so much passion and devotion and sincerity and fire, you know, it's just perfect. And I would be, you know, then I would be a vocalist for this. You know, I would be, the channel or something. You know, it's just, it's perfect, you know. And somebody told me 35 years ago, a sister friend, she said, you know, Dennis, you sound like an angry woman trapped inside a man's body, in this world of gender transformation, you know, it's a wonder that I didn't go in that direction. But I'm a very heterosexual type of guy, you know, and I have a wonderful marriage, and I wouldn't have written this book if it wasn't for my wife, who is very loving and very supportive of all that I know and believe and talk about. And it's been a very great healing experience the last 15 years since we met. We both helped raise, she helped raise my stepdaughter and my daughter, and I have helped raise her son. So that was very nice. We're both survivors from, you know, some other marriages. She's a Virgo, like she's got about 9 planets in Virgo. And everything's Virgo right now. The moon is in Virgo. The North Node is in Virgo, which is influencing the planet. Bernie Sanders is a Virgo. The star Regulus has moved into Virgo. It was in Leo for 500 and something years, and it's been this long era of like demagoguery and egomaniacs and, you know, dictators and male, and I'm so sick to death of testosterone and all these creeps. So that has changed. That changed last summer. And it has moved into Virgo. So we got a 500-year period of the star Regulus in Virgo. So it's changing from me to we. Bernie Sanders is the harbinger of that. You know, he's carrying the banner out there. Everyone's going, yeah! So that's Virgo. Virgo. Everything's Virgo. And that's why it's perfect to be talking about this and trying to understand what virginity means. And like the idea of the immaculate conception, you know, it's very deceiving because it's saying that, you know, there's something impure and dirty about sex. You know, and you go, no. You know, a woman in a state of like spiritual, orgiastic bliss, you know, in meditation, or I don't know, maybe she's taken a mushroom and there's a ceremony to try to, you know, to get her egg to self-fertilize in some ancient ceremony. And then the reason for trying to do this is, this is the huge controversial subject idea of that. Why would a woman want a child this way? And because according to all the mythology and the oral stories of the past and in religions, that the children born through these conceptions are very highly evolved beings. Or you could look at it this way. Every one of us is a highly evolved being in essence. But through that type of conception, the highly evolved being that person particularly is, that's coming into that conception, is able to fully manifest itself without any middleman, so to speak, pun intended, you know. So the children born to these conceptions have a greater chance of really being 100% unfettered, you know. But I believe that we are all highly evolved beings, all of us. We've taken on bodies and we're having human experiences. But if you prepare the ground, you know, if you clean the vehicle and repair it and regenerate it and bring it absolute tune with chlorophyll, you know, the sunlight energy that's trapped in food particles, you know, and you get full of sunlight energy, and there's a chance that, you know, like being in an ecstatic state and right around when a woman is ovulating with circles of women dancing around fires and drumming and maybe taking some mushrooms, maybe taking some mead wine, you know, and maybe even, you know, having like a tantric partner, you know, but it could be even a male, but there's no penetration whatsoever. You know, there's no, the man doesn't deposit seed. He holds on to his energy and recycles it and sublimates his orgasm. I mean, it's messy stuff having a parthenogenetic, a virgin conception. You know, it's messy. It's blood and guts, you know, because that's what we are. We're flesh and blood. So it's not like, you know, this image of Mary with a white gown, you know, lying on a leather ottoman inside of a tent, and there's nobody around, and this light comes down, and she does, you know, she's like knitting or something, and she's not even paying attention. And then, you know, this white light says, "Hey, you just conceived Jesus." And you go, "Oh, really?" You know, it's not like it's not like a passive experience, you know. It's a dynamically. So that's kind of, I brought you to the moment of conception there.
But, so let me ask you, you kind of give us a teaser in your bio that you've met a woman who has experienced parthenogenesis. Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, so after, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, about 7 years later after, you know, gathering more information about virgin conception and matriarchy. You know, there's a lot of feminist, radical feminist books that were coming out in the late 60s and early 70s, and I grabbed every single one of them I possibly could. I read the most fiercest feminist doctrines, you know, like Mary Daly, you know, which as a man, you can barely get through it. You go, wow, this is insane. This is so intense. You know, in one book, I think it's called Gynecology. And she goes through like every word in the English language that is full of.
She does. It's beautiful.
Woman hatred. You know, it's just full of. It just shows that misogyny that's out there. This fear of loathing and hatred toward women and the feminine you know, but I read all that. I got scorched by it, but I survived. You know, it's like she's telling the truth. You know, we've been in the dark ages and controlled by male violence for thousands of years and stinks. You know, I've been an artist my whole life, and so that's why it's so easy for me to relate to the women's movement, because that's the feminine energy. You know, I'm a left-handed, right-brained musician, artist, poet, writer, you know, and a very sensitive, skinny guy, and, you know, I mean, I got a lot of energy, you know, I'm a Leo, of all things, so it's like the quintessential masculine energy, but nevertheless, I get this extreme feminine side that I've always had, and I've always been pushing my whole life, and it's just, you know, you come against a brick wall all the time when you're an artist, a musician, a poet, you know. I feel like I'm in the wrong time period. I need to be in a renaissance. I need to be in a matriarchy. We all do. I'm so sick to death of all these stupid men ruling the planet. I'm just fed up to death. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate all the sports. I hate the militarism. You know, a certain amount of sports is fine. You know, it's a great release of testosterone. Great, it's healthy. But all the other stuff, the rape culture, you know, the stupid Republicans and their agenda and their dumbass legislation and anti-women this and anti-women that. And it's like, when are we going to grow up, you know? But anyway, I forgot where I was heading with that. You know, I can talk for like days.
You were going to tell us the story of your friend
Yes, oh, beginning to my friend. So after 7 years, thank you so much. After 7 years, I'm living in Southern Oregon and kind of finishing this work that I was doing, helping this little old man, Indian man, a Klamath Modoc Indian man who got ripped off by the government to try to get some land back so he could build a traditional village on for his people, you know. Anyway.
Wow.
And I was with this group of non-violent American Indian activists, and the whole thing fell apart, and they all moved out, but I wanted to stay with this old guy and his wife and his children, and I hung in there for, I don't know, an extra 6 months, 8 months, and I was all by myself living out in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, this friend came up from Ashland, Oregon, who used to be a part of the group, and she said, "Dallas, you got to come to Ashland." I said, "Why?" Well, I told this woman that I met, this friend, she became a friend, and I told her, anyway, we had this long talk, and I told her about you and how you went to Hippocrates Health Institute, and you knew a lot about all kinds of mysterious things about diet and regeneration. And this woman is over six feet tall, and she's just wonderful, and she hasn't eaten anything in a year. And I said, "What?" So I had already read about breatharians. There are mm-hmm. breatharians. There's a few that live right here in the United States. Now, this woman is no longer a breatharian, but she was for 2.5 years. And anyway, I felt like my time had run out with the project there in Southern Oregon. So I packed up my few belongings, and I had a tiny room available that I could rent for a very reasonable price, and I found some like part-time work, and anyway, I got settled, and then I woke up one morning, and then there's this woman sitting on the wall in the garden in the backyard of my new apartment, and it turned out she used to live there, and she just woke up and felt like coming to see her garden where she used to live, and there she is, and we met. And I said, "Well, you must be the friend that my friend told me about that I needed to meet." And I said, "I certainly am." And she had a copy of Viktor Kovinsky's book called Survival into the 21st Century. She had a copy of that under her arm, and she was reading it. And Viktor became a personal friend of mine over the years. So we started talking immediately, and it never stopped. We had this conversation that went on for weeks and weeks, and she could talk for 8 hours, and then, I'd have to take a break and go get some food, you know, because there was no food in her house. So, obviously, her period had completely gone. Yeah.
For our listeners that may not be familiar with what a breatharian is, can you...
Yeah, it's somebody that's right.
Yeah.
Right, they're able to live on prana, you know, the energy that's from the sun and the air, and drinking water. She just drank distilled water. When she felt like she needed something more, she would get organic grapes, put them in a blender, and then strain it. She had to strain it because any pulp, she would regurgitate, you know. And that happened once. When she took a break, when we took a break from talking, like for 6 hours straight about everything under the sun. And so she did have to go to the bathroom and throw up. You know, she regurgitated the pulp. So that's how fine her system was. And she had plenty of energy until she twisted her knee. She slipped on something really slippery in the restaurant that she was working in, of all things. Everybody knew her in Ashland, Oregon. They knew that she didn't eat, and they didn't bother her about it, you know. Just a wonderful person, just full of fun, and it was an experiment. When she was like 14 or 15, she just became total vegetarian, and then fruitarian, and then sproutarian, and juicetarian, and... and then she started experimenting with fasting. She started on a 40-day fast, and she climbed a mountain, you know, not like with ropes, but she climbed the gentle mountain, and she got into the habit of doing a lot of climbing while she was fasting during that 40 days, and she stopped losing weight. Her weight became 135. Even when she went back to eating years later, she's still 135 and 6 feet, 2 inches tall. I mean, that's, you know, but she looks nice. You know, she's not like gaunt looking. You know, she just has nice round cheeks, and she's just a very simple, fun-loving person. She's not like holier-than-thou attitude or going around preaching that she doesn't eat. You know, I stayed in touch with her during that 2.5 year period, and the book goes into great detail, and it gets very deep, and it gets very sorrowful, and it gets very glorious and very rich in human experiences. I don't know if it's really difficult to talk about, but my son, I had a little boy at the time. He was 4.5, and he tragically drowned in a stupid accident, you know, of a drowning accident. His mother and I were not, we were like 100 feet away, and he just slipped on something that like a slimy log that he got attracted to, obviously, and didn't find his body till the next day. It was really agony. But my friend Laurie had gone back to Colorado to live with her mother, but she found out through the grapevine what had happened. My wife and I weren't together at that time. This is way back in 1976. And anyway, but Laurie stayed in touch with me. She knew that I was hurting. She knew I felt suicidal. I returned back east to live with my folks for a while to try to heal. I mean, I was pretty broken after that.
Yeah.
And I got into some alcoholism, but I could never be an alcoholic. It was more of a joke, but I had to stay numb for a while. And my lifestyle changed, but she kept in touch with me, and it was amazing to get phone calls from her, and she still hadn't broken her fast. And all of these incredible psychic things were happening to her, dreams about my son and telling me everything is okay and that he loves me, and it was an accident, it was nobody's fault, and, you know, that and that. So that kept me going. But she kept telling me about her body, to all these changes. Her breasts mysteriously began to leak milk, and she was wondering if I could get in touch with Dr. Ann Wigmore and Victoris Kalvinskas and ask about that. And they assured her that it was normal, it was natural, it was okay, it happens to vegetarian women, it happens, you know, for no particular reason. They couldn't nail it, you know. But she called me, she called me one particular night, and it was so incredible. She just was coming down from an experience of bliss in her meditations. Sometimes her meditations would last like 4 hours. And she was told there was a voice and a powerful light. I mean, it sounds so generic. It's like almost like a near-death experience, except it was a conception experience. But she was told that she had conceived the child, and she was blown away by it. She didn't expect it, had no idea. But, you know, and she ended up going like several weeks later. She asked my advice. She said, "Look, Dennis, I'm afraid that the light is going to be disgruntled, but I really want to find out if this is real." So she went and got tested for being pregnant. And she was. It was verified. And it happened. She got verified twice at different periods of time, but she got verified twice through two different doctors, two different states. And that's a long story, but it gets better and more crazy and almost like science fiction. It's a beautiful story, just the story of Laurie. It's a long chapter in the book, and it goes into a lot of detail about it. But
I have to ask you, so have you maintained a raw food diet or a vegetarian diet?
No. No, I find it absolutely impossible to do. I pretty much eat small amounts of almost anything. I try to make, you know, as nice choices as I can. But I'm a very skinny, tall guy, and seems like I can, you know, eat anything and I'm okay. But I just eat small amounts. Sometimes just two meals a day is enough, moderate, you know. So I practice, you know, all things in moderation. And that seems to work for me. You know, I would love nothing better than to live like Victorious Kolvinskis. I mean, he has a land base in Costa Rica, you know, and that's where he has raw food seminars. And he goes on the road a lot, you know, teaching about, you know, chlorophyll and sprouts and wheatgrass and everything. But yeah, because nothing, I would absolutely love to do that, but maybe in a future life, I would love to come back. Because it is a wonderful, you know, beautiful way to live. And just to have that sexual energy sublimated and used in a very high level is wonderful. But I have a wonderful marriage, so, you know, sex is nothing without love. You know, what makes sex so beautiful is when you really, really love somebody, because then it's just a tool. You know, sex is just a wonderful tool. It's like paintbrushes, you know. I love my paintbrushes, but they're just sitting there in my can, you know. Unless I start creating with them, they don't have any meaning, you know, and sex is pretty much like that. And so sexual love is wonderful. It's very close to being in heaven. It's like playing music. that's another piece of heaven. And but to eat raw food like that every day and play music and maybe have tantric love, you know, I mean, you know, that's heaven on earth, you know. And to have women rule everything, you know, that's fine with me. And throw a few guys in there, you know. But I just don't think men should not be in charge of all the stuff that they are in charge of. No, that's over. That's the past. That's the dark ages. We got to get out of that. You know, women slowly are infiltrating love. When I say slowly, that's not true. It's the pace is picking up everywhere, globally. Women are just, you know, they're just getting there. They're just infiltrating everything. And the more that happens, the better. And I'm not talking about Margaret Thatcher types, you know, Margaret Thatcher types, or shall I say the word Hillary. Oh, my God. I mean, Hillary is okay, but that's not the kind, you know.
We don't do politics.
Okay, good. All right. So that's all right. So we'll go no further. I know my stomach is turning just thinking about politics. So we'll go away from that. But
have a few minutes left. So let me ask you. So what you know, with people approaching parthenogenesis, what would you like them to take away from your book?
Well, I know it's similar to what Margaret Rigolosio has said, and it's that, well, you know, for some people, you mean, we don't necessarily have to take parthenogenesis literally. I mean, for those of us that it's too much to contemplate, it just the value in it, and Margaret recognizes the value, is just the empowering, the psychological empowering, especially for women, of just thinking about it and examining it, reading her books about the Greek mythology of it, you know, and how these ancient priestesses, you know, practiced this and learned it from the Egyptians, you know, there's a link to that. And but anyway, just the idea that, like, you know, like Bob Dylan will come out with an album and it's completely different than the one that he made 2 years before. And they always say, oh, he recreated himself, you know, and that's what artists do. They recreate themselves. So in a way, that's a form of parthenogenesis, is when you recreate yourself. So just that principle, and it could be the principle that's operating in the black holes in our galaxies as well. Parthenon, it might be the Mayans refer to the black hole in our galaxy as the womb. So that's womb power, you know, how it draws energy into itself. And it could be that, you know, the astrophysicists are talking about how the black holes take that energy of collapsing stars and it gets concentrated and transformed, and then it goes into another dimension where it feeds new stars into another universe in a different dimension. How do you like that? That's one of the latest, astrophysicist scientific ponderings, and it blends with the Mayan idea of the womb. So we have, especially women, have that. It's like an echo of it, a reflection, you know, so above, so below. Women especially have the potential to recreate themselves on a biological level, the psychological level, spiritual level, emotional level. Yeah, so women always lead in that department, and men need to listen more to when women are talking, you know, not that anything that they say is, you know, not that every woman is totally in line, you know, but there's a lot of wisdom that just comes out of a woman that I get direction from, you know, just by listening to my wife, you know, and she's very humble. She's not bossy, but she's like right, like 90% of the time, you know. Once in a while I'm right and it's like, wow, I can put a check mark on the calendar, you know? But she's like right all the time. You know, she's just right, you know, without even, oh yeah, she's just, I can't define it. I think I'm smart and I'm in touch, but it's like, no, I can't compete. So,
well,
there's so much wisdom to be tapped.
Thank you so much, Jen, for sharing.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. What an honor. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. What an honor. Thank you.
You're so welcome. And, you know, I encourage everyone certainly to, you know, as Jen said, to think about parthenogenesis. It's a fascinating concept. And, of course, for me with my beloved Shakti, it's very close to home. So I
love it.
I enjoy that. Yes. All right.
I'd like to, can I encourage just people, they can find, I believe I'm the only one in the entire Facebook world. You can find, you know, if you can type the word parthenogenesis, you'll find my page. So I have a page devoted to it, and you've got a link to my book. It's a very humble book, and I don't think it'll ever become a bestseller. And I'll be lucky if it ever pays for itself. So it's not like I'm in it for the money, but I love to share this and to have more people thinking about it. And you wouldn't believe some of the stories that have come my way, you know, once people have read the article. Over 30,000 people have read the article before it was a book. And you wouldn't believe the personal testimonies, you know, people's women going, oh, yeah, there's no way that I had sex, but I gave birth to my little boy. And you go, what?
Wow.
And, you know, so, you know, there are people coming forward, you know, and you wouldn't believe some of the people. You know, one of them is pretty famous, and he said he was conceived that way. His mother always told him. And this guy's an American inventor. He's in his 70s, and he's got about 400 patents out.
Oh.
He's a genius. He's a genius. So he, you know, we had an hour conversation on the phone after he read my article, and he just spilled his gut. He said, you know, I don't have a chance to tell anybody about this, but I'm going to tell you. And he's no flake, you know. So that's the kind of stuff that's going on. And
good.
We'll
make sure to share your link. I don't want to cut you off, but we're going to get cut off.
Yep, no.
By Black
Talk. Okay, good. Thank you so much. Thanks for extending.
Thank you, Jen Poitras, the author of Parthenogenesis, and for all of our listeners that were tuning in tonight, and I really appreciate you. Have an absolutely fabulous evening, and I will be Thursday by the full moon. We're in our final countdown. Blessings, everyone, and happy full moon. Good night.
Thanks, Kim.